Hi, welcome to Navigating Developmental Delay Podcast. I'm Ms. Burr.
And I'm Dr. Hamilton.
We want to welcome you and encourage you to follow us on social media. You can find us on our Twitter platform at NavigatingDevel1, Instagram, all one word, Navigating Developmental Delay, and Facebook. We hope that you visit our social media sites. You can access them through our episode webpage or wherever you get your podcasts. Our website is also on there, navigatingdevelopmentaldelays.com. Be sure to check out our tweets as we will tweet out articles that we refer to on our podcast, and the links can also be found in our episode webpage.
So we wanted to go over our medical disclaimer real briefly at the beginning of each episode. We want to stress that we are putting this information out there for informational purposes only. We want to stress that we are not giving anyone medical advice or occupational therapy advice. For medical advice, you should reach out to your children's pediatrician or family physician only. So our podcast and blog disclaimer, while we make every effort to broadcast correct information, we are still learning. One doctor and occupational therapist may have a different way of doing things from another. We welcome any comments, suggestions, or correction of errors. We take no money from advertisers at this time. By listening to this podcast or reading our blog, you agree not to use this podcast or blog as medical advice to treat any medical condition in either yourself or others, including but not limited to patients that you are treating. Consult your family physician or your own physician for any medical issues you may be having. This entire disclaimer also applies to any guests or contributors to the podcast or blog. Under no circumstances shall Navigating Developmental Delays podcast, any guests or contributors to the podcast, or blog, or any employees, associates, be responsible for damages arising from use of the podcast or blog. For a more detailed disclaimer, please visit our website at navigatingdevelopmentaldelays.com.
Hi, welcome to episode 3 of Navigating Developmental Delays podcast. Today we're going to talk about how to support your child in cyber or all remote learning. We wanted to let parents know first off that this is actually a mode of learning that a lot of families have opted for. And so we want to take the guilt out of it right away. Mm-hmm. I know as a parent, you know, it's hard to make these choices. And you know, I've heard from families that, you know, some of their children are a little frustrated about this choice. And I want to tell parents out there that a lot of families are opting for this. You know, it's okay if you choose this option over sending your children to school.
Right. And I think that one of the things, you know, something someone said to me was very clarifying. They said that they initially felt really bad about their kids not being in school, but then when they went to school to pick up materials a few times, they realized how different school is this year. So
right.
It's like they were mourning their kids missing the school experience, but it's not the same experience as they remembered in, you know, last year. So you're not missing out on the same experience. It's a different situation. So, you know, if you're feeling really bad about your kids missing out on those social opportunities, those things look very different this year.
Yeah, I know. I think that's a great point. And I know a lot of families have thought of or planned about, you know, quarantining and, you know, they didn't have the supports that they would need in order to have their child be quarantined for 14 days. You know, every other month and things like that. So, mm-hmm. You know, it was really a lot of decisions around who would be able to take care of your children, either while you're working or when mm-hmm. they would be pulled out of school.
Right. And I think the bottlenecks with some of the testing, you know, taking anywhere from, you know, 2 days to like 10 days or more, that makes it really impossible if your job doesn't have paid, you know, medical leave. Like, how are you going to handle that and pay your bills?
Right, right. So we just, you know, we wanted to kind of put that disclaimer out there, get the guilt out of there, right out of the way. Today we're going to talk a lot about the same kind of things we talked about in the hybrid model. You know, we're going to discuss what to look for in your IEP plan, you know, different environments for best learning, what parents can do if they are working and their child is doing this remote learning option. So my first question, I think, you know, a lot of parents, you're seeing a lot of neat pictures on Instagram and Twitter of these mm-hmm. beautiful, you know, learning environments. What are some of the things that parents should be looking for when they're setting up their learning environment?
I think that trying to minimize clutter and trying to make sure that, you know, you have an environment that is free of distractions as much as is possible.
Right.
And again, this is ideal world situation versus real world. You know, I think sometimes on social media, you see these ideal learning pods, and that's really not how most of us have the situation.
Yeah, that's a great point.
So just realizing that you do the best you can, but trying to have really an environment that is not cluttered for the kids is helpful. And I think that there's some simple things you can do. Like, for example, I think that one of the things that is helpful is if you got a district, you know, iPad or some other device, one of the things that's important is setting an alarm for when the kids have to log in, send like a repeating alarm. Well, let's say his child has class at 8:45. So set an alarm for waking up, and then you can label the alarm, like, you know, wake up and, you know, put the specific things they have to do. It's a good visual. Or sometimes you can have a different type of alarm you can set, maybe like a verbal alarm, and you can do that as well. But having an alarm for the times they have to log in, because I will tell you, you know, honestly, Erin, if you have any suggestions, I would love to hear them, because it's overwhelming the number of times kids have to log in and out.
Yes.
There's so many passwords. It's kind of ridiculous, you know. I think getting a plastic sheet and printing out the Zoom passwords in like big letters, and I would almost recommend putting them in order. So you have the first one, second one, third one, all the different meetings they have to log into. And, you know, you can color code it if it's helpful. You can put it in order. You can put a 1, 2, 3, 4 on it. But it's very challenging because there are lowercase letters in passwords, uppercase letters, and you need to talk to your kids specifically and have them practice logging in. But what are your suggestions? I want to actually get your take on it, because it's one of the things as an OT, you know, we talk about how to keep the environment optimized for kids. And with all of these different meetings they have to log into and log out of, this has been very challenging. I have parents telling me this has been, you know, impossible. Kids are having to click on so many different meetings. Do you have any thoughts on that?
So, you know, I think when we talk about the visuals, right? Like as you were saying, you set a timer. I know one simple thing that I've done with a couple of families so far is just get a whiteboard and really write down on there your daily schedule, and you can change it every day depending on the meetings you have to log into. And then on that whiteboard, you can also record right next to it the passwords that you'll need for each link. Mm. So again, you know, that works for kids who are reading. Mm-hmm. You know, if your child isn't a reader yet, you know, creating a simple Word document that has the links embedded so that it's in the visual schedule in the order, and you can click on that link, that can also be helpful. And then also, again, talking to your team, right? I think, again, this is all new, and so I think teachers might not be aware sometimes of how difficult it can be for children to navigate through several web pages to get to where they need to. And so I definitely recommend bringing that up to your team so that, you know, either they make it a simple process or they dedicate some time that they actually have some one-on-one practice with a teacher doing these things.
I think it's interesting because when we have a new technological change at work that we have to go through, you know, we have all these screenshots of things we look at, and it says click here, then click here. And that's really not something that's happening for kids in school.
Right.
You know, they're just being, you know, being told during their sessions, click here, click here, click here. And for kids, I think it's, you know, I think kids end up being really good with technology compared to some other people. But I think that it's really too much. It's like information overload. And I think that it has to be made simpler by some of the districts.
Yeah, no, I agree. You know, and then added to the frustration, if a link doesn't work, you know, what's your protocol for that? And, you know, talking through with your child the frustration piece, that it's okay if, you know, we click on this and it doesn't work, or the class can't get into, you know, the Zoom or the Bop or whatever those, you know, apps are that they're in. What, you know, what are you going to do in that moment so that you can get through the rest of your day?
Right.
Yeah. So as far as setting up your environment and your space, simple things, lots of visual schedules or visuals to help kids, you know where they should be at the certain time. I would also recommend just taking a look at the seating, you know, so that your kid is as comfortable as possible. The great thing about iPads is, you know, you can be at the desk and then you can be lying on the floor. You can change your position quite a bit. So I think, you know, that's always something to look at is how your child is sitting and kind of their comfort level for their actual body and mechanics.
Mm-hmm. Do you know if a lot of the online school options are putting in movement breaks? Because I, you know, we had tweeted out that article earlier about how for kids with ADHD and kids in general, movement breaks and, you know, aerobic activity helps them focus better. And we had talked about, you know, Go Noodle and some other options that kids use in school. But is there, have you noticed if, have you heard from any of your patients if kids are getting this incorporated in remote schooling? I haven't heard anything one way or another.
Yeah, you know, and I think I've heard, you know, both sides. I've heard some districts are doing really well with that and are very aware that children need to move and are doing Go Noodle or yoga breaks. I know there's some older children who get those frequent breaks throughout the day with independent study and things like that, and teachers are really recommending to them, you know, don't go on your phones during mm-hmm. this time. Don't mm-hmm. go play a video game. Mm-hmm. Go move your body. Right. Which, you know, I think is hard sometimes for our older kids where they do want to just zone out and text a friend and mm-hmm. be on those screens. But I would really recommend, you know, trying to move their body a little bit, even if it's just for 5 minutes, get up, stretch, you know, mm-hmm. take a walk. And, you know, then there's some schools who have little kids on for a really, really long time. And I think that's going to be a struggle for families.
Mm-hmm. No, definitely. You know, I think that, you know, there's some great ideas in that New York Times article that we tweeted out yes. earlier. So I think that you can look at those and see if there's anything you can set up when you set up your home environment, if that's something you can incorporate.
And so I know part of that article was talking, we posted something about actual visually taking a break from the screen. Can you remind me again some of the things that they recommended so that your vision, you know, is optimal during all day learning?
Sure. So there was a great article in the New York Times. It was titled How to Protect Children's Eyes During Remote Learning. And we know one of the things, if you talk to ophthalmologists, generally they tell you to take a break after looking at a screen for 20 minutes, because I've asked ophthalmologists this and that's the advice I've gotten, okay. you know, for kids. So clearly when you're online all day, that's not something that's happening, right? You're not getting a break after 20 minutes.
Right.
So there's a few things the article talked about. It talked about keeping a safe distance from devices. There was a physician quoted in the article, Dr. Knight, and he said that we should follow the 20-20-20 rule. He said every 20 minutes, you need to look at something 20 feet away for 20 seconds.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, that's a good, you know, way to remind kids, you know, the 20-20-20 rule. And Dr. Dietz is a pediatric ophthalmologist who was also quoted as saying, keep devices, you know, try to keep them about 2 feet away if possible and at eye level or below. So I think a lot of people prop up the devices higher than eye level.
Right.
So he was recommending keeping them at eye level or below eye level so kids don't have to look up.
Mm-hmm.
And that causes less fatigue of their eye muscles. And, you know, the ophthalmologists that they spoke to in the article were skeptical of blue light glasses because I know that's been marketed a lot in terms of, you know, reducing, you know, the glare and things like that. So they felt like there wasn't enough data to say that was consistently helpful. And they said that a better investment might be to buy a kid sunglasses to protect them from UV light outside.
Oh, interesting.
And, you know, again, very important not to skip vision screenings. I think people are afraid sometimes to seek medical care with everything that's happening. But remember that, you know, it's really important to stay with your regular, you know, physical exams. You know, vision screenings are part of that.
Right. Make sure you're wearing those glasses if you're supposed to be wearing those glasses.
Right.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Right. No, I think that's great. So let's shift gears a little bit and talk specifically about IEPs. You know, we talked a little bit on our last podcast about what kind of things you would look for in an IEP if you were in a hybrid model. Certainly, it's going to look different if your child is doing all remote learning. What kind of supports have you seen be put in place so far?
So I really think people are still figuring out what some of this looks like. You know, one of the things that I've heard over and over again is, you know, a lot of people have, there's big staffing shortages, right?
Right.
Because a lot of people who are doing remote learning, schools don't have the staff, you know, for paraprofessionals and other support staff that they used to have. So I think that we have to keep that in the back of our mind. You know, it's really bad situation all around. But I think that, remember, the IEP has to be very individualized. But my recommendation is, if you see your child is struggling a lot now, do not wait for your IEP meeting in 3 months.
Okay.
I feel like the longer you wait, the more your child can get behind. But you know, the more entrenched they will become in their patterns. For example, if they're struggling and, you know, not able to do homework by themselves, the more that struggle will turn into a daily thing and increase frustration, and you don't want them to stop trying, you know, what sure. they have to do. And then if you reach out to school after weeks and weeks and months of struggle, they might, you know, they might say, hey, we didn't hear anything back. So they were doing fine for 3 months. So what changed? So keeping that constant communication is helpful. But one thing that I was going to recommend, and I don't know if you've seen that, if there are 4 to 10 programs that kids are having to turn in their assignments on,
mm-hmm.
you know, like some of the ones that I've seen are like, you know, Seesaw, Google Classroom, Flipgrid, you know, Zoom, iReady, ask your kids' teachers. This is probably the most important takeaway I'm going to say today. Ask your kids' teachers to make a list of daily homework and put which program the homework is due on.
Right.
Because I think that, you know, it's death by a thousand paper cuts, right? You have to click 5 different places to get one assignment.
Yeah.
So ask your kids' teachers to make a list. So it could say something like work, you know, that is due today. It might say something like make a video about, you know, Cat in the Hat and Flipgrid. Number 2, do, you know, this math lesson on, you know, Seesaw. 3, it could say finish your writing assignment on Google Classroom. So I think we really have to cut down the clutter
mm-hmm.
and make it more streamlined for kids to prime them for success. I don't think that's something that's automatically happening. And, you know, teachers are struggling too, Erin, with this. So I think if you're pointing out a problem that you're having, I think it's always a really good idea to suggest a solution.
Yep. Yeah. No, I think that's great. And like you're saying, you know, they just might not be aware of that. And as, you know, a caregiver, I would say don't be afraid to point these things out, because it is a learning process for all of us. And if you're struggling to access the homework, then, you know, there's going to be other children out there and other families who are as well. So it'll, you know, be helpful in the long run to all the families to kind of learn what will work for children.
Right. I want to ask you a question about IEP meetings. I wanted to ask you, do you think that there should be more frequent meetings? Like, what are your thoughts about when kids are in all cyber?
I do. You know, I think, again, it's something new. And so we're going to have to collaborate a little bit more and be okay with calling some more meetings, just because we know that it's going to take time for kids just to even get back to where they were, you know, mm-hmm. 6 months ago. And so we're looking at not only learning the new programs and how to access that, but then once that gets in place, now what? How are we actually educating our children?
Right.
How are we going to catch them up to where they were 6 mm-hmm. months ago?
Right.
Yeah. I think another interesting thing when we talk about cyber and IEPs is the technology piece, you know, and being able to get some adaptations for that. You know, you might mm-hmm. want to consider an assistive technology evaluation, or have someone in your team who's really going to look at that piece, because there are so many programs. It's okay if your child can't, you know, do Flipgrid and you can find something that works for them. They might need a keyboard instead of using the iPad. And so there's some technology adaptations that are going to probably need to be discussed, and you want to make sure you have that person who knows those programs in that meeting.
How would you recommend that, you know, parents go about requesting a technology eval with cyber?
I think anytime you make any request as a parent, you want to put it in writing. You know, putting it in an email is best, and sending it to your service coordinator, or that, you know, your person that is your contact for the team, and then, you know, giving them that timeline to bring that person on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's a really good point, because I think that a lot of times, you know, we're not turning in work, so if kids are not great at typing, there's a typing program I really liked called Dance Mat Typing.
Oh, yes.
I thought that was a really fun way to teach kids typing. Do you have any recommendations about to help kids with some of those typing skills?
Yeah, and I think, this is a great question because, you know, we have kindergartners and first graders who we're not expecting them to know how to type.
Right. They're just learning their letters.
Right. Exactly. So, right. You know, I think this is a challenging thing for a lot of families. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite things to use for this young group is actually the voice dictation. Hmm. Kids, you know, they're so good at it now because they tend to be able to grab their parents' phone and talk right into that phone and, mm-hmm. and text their grandma or whoever's around.
Yeah.
So, you know, for a child who's really struggling with typing and appropriately so for their age, a lot of times I'll use the voice dictation and have them really talk to their teacher or talk through their writing assignments. So I'm a big fan of that. Another thing I'm a fan of is, what is that app called? The one where you can type over worksheets.
Oh, SnapType Pro.
Yes, SnapType. I love SnapType. I think that's a great program as well. You know, if you have a child who has anything printed out, but they really want to work on some of the typing, mm-hmm. I like practicing that with, you know, some Mad Libs or some fun activities so they can practice the typing that way.
That's actually a great recommendation. So I'm going to put a link to the Dance Mat Typing. And I'm going to put a link to the SnapType Pro. So SnapType Pro, for those of our listeners who are not familiar with the program, you basically are just going to take a picture of a worksheet, and then you're going to click somewhere, and it turns that area into a text box where you can just type.
Right.
Anything else to add about the program? Or?
No, you know, I think it's really affordable, and I will say it's very simple. So the children who I've used it with tend to pick it up very quickly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a very intuitive program.
Now, I have a question we didn't talk about, but it definitely relates to the IEP. And I feel like you had touched on this in the blog post that you had written about privacy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hearing from a lot of schools telling children that they can't turn off their video when they're in a classroom for liability reasons. And I just wonder, as you know, our children who might have ADHD or, you know, visually it's just a lot to handle for right. the entire day.
Right.
You know, what should we be discussing with the team, and how do we kind of remedy some of that might be a little bit overwhelming visually for a child?
I think some of the legality of some of this is not clear, right?
Right.
I think that, you know, for liability reasons, what does that mean exactly? You know, does it mean that if the kids are doing all their work and communicating with you, you know, does that mean that they're not allowed to turn it off for a second? Because for some kids, visually, it's overwhelming, like you said.
Yeah.
It's like sensory overload.
Right.
You have like 20 kids on the screen sometimes.
Right.
So I think that that is not clear to me that, and let me see how best to explain this. A lot of times when people say for liability reasons we can't do this, ask for a copy of their policy.
Mm-hmm.
Say, please send me a copy of your liability policy with online school. And, you know, that's one of the things I mentioned in the blog post. If that's something that is very clearly fleshed out policy, they should have no problem giving you a copy of the policy.
That's an excellent point. And I really like that because I've heard that from several parents this week, and I don't know how to respond to the question either.
Right.
You know, I can definitely see both sides if it is a liability, right. But at the same time, I know right. as an adult, I don't want to be on a Zoom meeting all the time. I want to just listen in right. and learn that way. So
right.
I think it's something that schools are going to have to navigate as we go along.
Right. And I think also with like virtual backgrounds, I've heard that people don't want kids to put on too many distracting virtual
sure.
backgrounds. So that's something else to, you know, check with your school on. But I think that in all cases, if you have an educational advocate, check with your educational advocate and ask, very simple, ask school for a copy of their policy.
Yeah, that's great advice. So for our parents who are able to kind of sit and listen in on the class and are there to be able to help their children, do you, let's talk about like how much do you actually help as a parent, right? Like, do you really want to dive in there and, you know, make sure your child is raising their hand the whole time and, mm-hmm. You know, participating, but you know, what's really appropriate as a parent or a caregiver when you're looking at helping your child?
So I think this is yet to be determined, right? Because I think that one of the things that we see is, You know, and this is something we talk about with kids all the time. You don't want your kids to become prompt dependent, mm-hmm. but it's important, you know, that you as parents are able to help them troubleshoot or speak out if something seems unreasonably difficult, right? Your parents are the best advocates that kids have.
Absolutely.
So, you know, one mom, you know, I'll give you, tell you a story. One mom told me that her son was having difficulty and he has, you know, ADHD. So she thought maybe he was just not focusing well. But when she was, you know, nearby for a session when he was doing his classwork, it wasn't until she saw all the things he had to click and navigate on his own that she realized that it wasn't him. It was the way things were set up for his assignments. So I think for a lot of parents, you know, it provides some valuable insight. And if you are there for some sessions, it's really going to help you become a better advocate for your child. But I think that, you know, in the beginning, I think it's fine to help a little bit more. But then as the kids become, you know, more adept at handling that, you know, you want to make sure they're not becoming prompt dependent and you might have to step back. And, you know, in the beginning, I would say help more as they get acclimated to the different, you know, places they have to turn in assignments. But after that, I would just step back and then let the kids ask you for help if they need it. I'm so sorry. That is someone knocking, but we can't get that. We got to go on. Okay, so I have a question for you next here, Erin. You're going to hear some knocking during our podcast. I'm sorry for that in advance. So, you know, I think as working parents, you know, I think it's very difficult to know how working parents can make cyber work if you're working from home. So do you have any thoughts or suggestions on how to do that?
I think that's a great question. And I will say, you know, I'm in this boat, you know, as a working parent, mm-hmm. and I have two children now who are doing cyber. It's not easy. Mm-hmm. I really like your suggestion of being able to kind of, if you can, take an hour and really look at what your child's doing and walk them through the different programming, mm-hmm. Help them lay out their day so that they have those visual timers or schedules, really set them up for success because you're not going to be around all the time for them.
Right.
So I think that practice of slowly having them become more independent is great. I think, you know, my children have come to know that if my office door is closed, mm-hmm. that I am in a session and mm-hmm. that they're allowed to open it when they hear that I'm done talking. But I've had friends who have done a stop sign on mm-hmm. their door, mm-hmm. Or ones that say, you know,
sometimes
they're free to talk.
The stop sign doesn't work. Case in point, you're hearing the knocking.
But I have to say, though, that very polite knocking and hoping that it'll be answered. And so, you know, I think sometimes, too, as a working parent, you just have to recognize that, right, mm-hmm. and say, you know, hey, listen, I might have my kid bust in, and please bear with me. You know, I think most of the time I'm usually on the other line with another parent, and they, you know, are very accepting and understanding of that. So.
Right. And I think, you know, I really like the idea of the stop sign, or, you know, you can do red light, green light,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, explain to kids that if there's a red light, you know, that they're not able to come in. But a lot of times then, you know, I've heard from parents a situation where they're like, okay, do your homework. And the kid's like, no, I'm holding a red light. I can't do my homework right now. So just be aware that might happen to you guys.
It means they're learning, though, right? That's a good thing.
Right. So, you know, we talked at the last episode about, you know, supporting kids in hybrid school. And we're talking today about, you know, supporting kids in all cyber school. But no matter what kind of school you're doing, one thing I really want to point out to everyone, please get your flu shot.
Okay.
It's going to be so very important to know that, you know, especially when kids start to feel, you know, have some kind of sickness or illness, like an upper respiratory type illness. If we've had the flu shot, then we can be less concerned about it being the flu versus COVID-19. It just, I think, helps. So even if you're not someone who usually, you know, opts for the flu vaccine for your kids, I think really consider it this year.
That's great. That's wonderful. So thank you so much today for all of your answers. And thanks out there for your listeners. I want to encourage you to make sure you hit the subscribe button for the podcast so that you can follow along with our podcast. And tune in next time. We're going to be addressing children's feelings on the pandemic and kind of how school's going for them. So it'll be an exciting episode.